It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Good afternoon and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters, episode 1306. I'm your host, Harry, joined today by Bo and Josh.
Hello.
Today we're going to be talking about the way that the migration figures that have recently been released are misleading the public. I'm going to be going into everything that Piers Morgan is willing to sacrifice for the sake of a curry, and Bo will be telling us about Trump's Thanksgiving gift. Before we get into any of that, though, I would like to say to everybody that we want to wish our condolences to the family and friends of Peter Whittle. If you've not heard, just a few hours ago, it was announced that Peter Whittle, head of the New Culture Forum, has sadly and tragically passed away. So our greatest condolences to everybody at the New Culture Forum, to his friends and family, and I would personally like to wish him to rest in peace. I only met him a couple of times when he was in the office for the podcast, and he was always unerringly polite and very well made up and very respectful. So I'm very sad to see that he's gone.
Yeah, he was a great and important voice, I think. One of the trailblazers for what we do. And I only met him very briefly a couple of times when he was in here. And extremely nice and polite IRL.
Yeah, he was a good man.
He's always had a lot of time for people from what I've been able to sort of understand. And when I've met him, he's always been very pleasant conversation. And, it's nice to have someone on Tufton Street that was on our side as well. Right. So, he was very much trying to push the gauntlet in a similar way that we were.
Yes. So as far as we know from what New Culture Forum have announced, they will be carrying on his work and legacy. So good luck to all of them. And we hope that that you can carry on through this loss. Again, our condolences. And everybody in the chat, please wish for Peter to rest in peace. After that, we also just have to say that for all of our Gold tier subscribers, we have the Zoom call later on at 3 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time. So join us for that if you want to have a chin wag. I think I'm on that one. I don't know who else is on that one, frankly. Are you on this one?
It says you and Carl on the
screen. I guess it's me and Carl. Yeah, that's all right then. So join that so that you can speak to me and Carl. And without any further ado, let's get into the news.
So Labour's released the migration figures for the past year. And I think it's September to September they actually cover. And they are devastating. But you wouldn't be able to get that from the news necessarily. And at first, this would seem like a Labour victory. And in fact, the Labour Party promised 2 years ago that they would cut net migration to 200,000 a year.
Which is still an absurdly large number.
It is indeed. Don't worry, we'll be getting to that and breaking that down a little bit more. But this is, at the time, Shadow Minister Darren Jones saying that the figures were extremely high. And of course, do we believe them? No. Labour, of course, have an ideological and sort of self-serving interest in carrying on mass migration. One, because they care more about people outside of Britain than the British people themselves. And two, they're importing new voters, and that's how they survive. And so, obviously, they have no interest in actually reducing migration. But you would think from headlines like this from the BBC, UK net migration drops sharply to 204,000, sorry. No, is that right? Yes. In a year to June, down 80% from its peak in 2023. So at the face of it, that would sound good, wouldn't it?
At the face of it, it sounds as though they've actually kept to a pledge that they made 2 years ago.
Well, technically they have, but not in the way that you would expect.
Not in a way that's actually going to be beneficial demographically.
If it was minus 204,000, we netted out 204,000, that still wouldn't be good enough.
It would be a start.
I'll take it, but that still wouldn't be good enough. So
there's millions to go, aren't there?
Yeah.
And here's The Guardian as well. Net migration to UK dropped 69% year on year, ONS figures show. Again, touch misleading, because people would go away from this thinking, okay, well, less people are coming into the country, wouldn't you? That's what you would get from that, because the net migration is down. Here's The Independent. Net migration to UK drops by 2/3 as fewer people come to Britain for work or study. Which is an interesting interpretation. I'm not entirely sure about that. But the BBC also has a very similar headline here when they reported on it a second time. Sharp fall in UK net migration with drop in arrivals for work and study. And maybe technically there has been a slight drop, but that's not the whole trend.
A slight drop from an insane all-time high.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it nearly 1 million 1 year? It was like 900 and something.
It's like when they say inflation is down, like from 7 or 8% down to 5%. That's not good. That's still not great.
That's terrible.
Like, I'll take that. It's better than it being higher, but it's still terrible. It's still disastrous.
There is also the point that we still can't trust any of these figures. I think the net high point for it was it in 2024? The numbers were revised nearer the end of the year.
There's an extra 270,000. We'll be getting to that.
Yes, there was 270,000 that we had just missed that then got added into the figures. So you can't trust these figures as they are released.
I will be going over all of this, don't worry. So even the New York Times across the Atlantic got in on this. The British public thinks immigration is up. It's actually down sharply. Wow. Thanks for that condescending headline, New York Times. And the reality is, if you could zoom out a little bit on that, Samson, so we can see it. We can see here the big spike. That spike peaked, I think, in 2023 there. Absolutely massive, unprecedented. So by getting immigration down, still higher than the pre-COVID levels anyway.
And all non-EU as well.
Mm-hmm. And also look at this. EU people, obviously, net decline. So people from Europe, the kind of immigrants that are at least compatible with our society, are going. Also, record numbers of British people are going. So the untold story here is, well, actually, immigration is down in part because there was a massive spike in the first place. Massive Tory betrayal, basically, is one way of putting it. And so it's returning to still above COVID levels, which was still too high in the first place, as well as the fact that record numbers of white Europeans are leaving, basically. And that includes British people.
So they say that being replaced is just purely a conspiracy theory. That's just not happening. You're mad. You're a tinfoil hat wearer if you say that. That's not happening. Well, that graph right there. I mean, if the EU or the British citizens are a net negative and people coming in are anything in the positive, then how can...
It's only a matter of time.
There's no other way to describe it. There's no other way to describe it than a replacement.
The way they get around this is they say that the conspiracy theory part is that it's deliberate, but they frame it in such a way that it makes it sound like, well, you're not being replaced. And they sort of weasel their words a little bit. I've noticed this sort of thing where they say, oh, the deliberate thing. And actually, lots of people that are talking about this are saying, well, it might not necessarily be a deliberate attempt to replace us in some sort of conspiratorial sense, but that's what's going to happen anyway, regardless of the intention. But that's quibbling over details.
Accident.
Yeah.
Right.
That's still just
still
as bad.
Being replaced.
Yeah, that's the worrying thing.
And it's not true anyway, because immigration policy is obviously a decision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, similarly, you can go and find, was it Peter Mandelson saying that they basically sent out squads in the late 90s after New Labour got in to find people to rub the right's nose in diversity.
Well done.
I mean, that there couldn't be a stronger declaration of intent in that statement.
And if we're to look at the actual numbers, Leo shared them, which was very helpful. So the net migration, obviously, we looked at that figure, but immigration is nearly 900,000 this year, but emigration is nearly 700,000. So that's why that we get this number, is that there's still large immigration, you know, nearly a million people in the country, massively unsustainable, undesirable, also largely from outside of Europe now, from non-European countries, which means that these are people that are more likely to cause problems. But also we're losing lots of Europeans as well, which is devastating, because these, basically, that emigration figure is productive people leaving, and that immigration figure is unproductive people coming in, people that cause crime. You know, emigration are the people that you can live alongside, and the immigration is certainly not sort of giving you the long and short of it there. And as Maven rightfully points out here, the story here is people, especially EU migrants, are choosing to go home. A net EU migration hit 332k a year in 2016. Today it's at minus 71k. So that's a massive change in a relatively short period of time. And that's largely because of what's happening to the country, I imagine. It's disincentivizing Europeans. Like, lots of Polish people are going home because Poland's now probably a nicer place to live than Britain.
Oh, definitely. It's,
say, who can you, blame them?
I was just about to say exactly that. Who can blame them? If you're from Scandinavia or Belgium or Holland or Germany or whatever.
Maybe not Germany.
Why would you stay here when your home country would probably be nicer now? Why would you?
There's no incentive to stay. And I mean, you know, I want them to be happier. So if they want to go home, that's fair enough. I'm not going to talk them out of it. But at the same time, they're the kind of migrants who are most likely to miss, because they're actually contributing and I can get along with them. Like, I've got a certain amount of camaraderie with fellow Europeans, whereas people from outside of Europe or North America, or just basically, you know, the former Anglo colonies, I've got no kinship or overlap with them. They cause problems. That's why they cause so much crime. That's why they leech off us and don't feel bad about it. And there's more here as well. From Nomus Events, saying they're doing exactly what they said they would do, using net migration figures to have visa expiries offset the millions of people who arrived in the provisional figures. And this is basically the idea that you can use visas expiring, and they don't actually have to know for certain these people have left. It's just that the visa's expired, therefore they've left.
Yeah, I got the year wrong, but he's saying here the 2022 figures were revised upwards by 270,000 people over the course of 2 years. So we can get the figures now, but then a few years from now, they might just go, we lost a few hundred thousand down the back of the sofa. So actually it ends up being like 500,000 total, something like that, net immigration into the country.
Thankfully, quite a few people actually picked up on a lot of these things. People weren't hoodwinked. I saw Matt Goodwin here pointing it out that, yes, actually, don't believe the hype. Lots of Brits and Europeans have left. That's part of the reason. And nearly 900,000 came into Britain last year. So this is no victory, which is correct. There he is talking about 75% of all immigrants into the UK now coming from outside of Europe, which, again, are some of the worst offenders in terms of sponging off of us and causing crime. Even Patrick Christie's of GB News was saying asylum seekers now make up 44% of net migration, which is an unusual way of putting it, because they're at about 100,000 a year, and so they're almost half of net migration. But that's a weird way of looking at it, because they count towards the figures anyway.
What we can use that figure for is, in that case, to say that, yeah, in terms of overall amount of people who've come into the country, if you just have it as gross figures, is about a million.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly a million people, not from Europe, not from countries where we want anybody, came into this country to take the place of a load of British people who left.
Exactly.
And to victimize, demonize, and stagnate the wages of everybody else who's still here.
Mm-hmm. And Morgoth gets it right, not that I'm surprised, saying that the immigration numbers aren't as peachy when you factor in native outflow, but we've been vindicated in viewing the Tories as uniquely rancid and treacherous. Which I think is completely fair.
Does Morgoth ever have a bad take?
I've never seen
that. I don't think so.
No. One thing I did find interesting is a representative of Migration Watch UK went on to Farage's show on GB News and started talking about the replacement of the white British. And he's basically saying, like, yeah, this is still way too high. We're still being replaced. And Farage just says, wow, strong stuff, which I didn't quite know what to make of because he didn't push back on it, which is a very low expectation, but he sort of allowed it. Which it's interesting that this is going on GB News now, that they're saying this, they're not necessarily pushing back, because I can remember a few years ago that they might have pushed back on that sort of thing and saying, well, actually, no. But I don't know. It's still a little bit tepid for my taste. I think that this should be the point of a spear, a point of attack that, you know, white British people, the people that this country is meant to serve above all, are being replaced in our own country, which is not a good thing, obviously, for us.
Well, it's the most important topic of our age.
Easily.
Everything else is downstream from it, really.
Well, also, if we fix that, we fix so many other problems that are caused in our society.
Of course, yeah.
Economic, crime, social, all of it is alleviated by dealing with this problem.
I completely agree with Steve Bannon on this. Obviously, American, talking about America first, but, you know. He says the same thing. Everything else is downstream. The war in Ukraine, the war in Israel, everything. The economy, everything. If we're not going to deport millions of people, then why are we even, you know, focusing on anything else, really? Because that's the fundamental, foundational issue. Completely agree with him.
No, I very much agree, yeah. So now on to speculating whether these numbers actually reflect the reality, because a recent study found that 1 in 5 people living in the UK were born abroad, which, if the figures are to be believed, surely shouldn't be possible, right? At the current rates of immigration and census data and the like, surely this wouldn't be achievable. But apparently it is, and it says, the shock study last night sparked calls for an emergency census to stop the public from being kept in the dark about the true scale of the UK's foreign-born population. It analysed revised immigration data published this week by the Office for National Statistics and found around 19.6% of the UK's population was born abroad. This was up from 16% recorded in the last census of 2021. And it carries on to say, in the year 2022, it saw the fastest rate of population growth since 1828, which is, you know, massive. This is sort of following the Industrial Revolution, when obviously you could have and afford a population explosion, but obviously we can't do that anymore. But it basically says that 1 in every 25 people in the UK today has arrived in the last 4 years, which is insane.
Thanks, Boris.
Yeah, cheers for that.
I appreciate that.
So what?
And even that early 19th century, 1828, there wouldn't be foreign invaders.
No, there'd be British people, wouldn't
they? Right, yeah.
Our own people.
With an antithetical worldview, here to literally invade for Gibbs. It wasn't that, was it, in the 1820s? So,
and also part of it would be, you know, lower infant mortality, better quality of food, and, you know, higher quality of living allowing this to happen, rather than people coming in and suppressing the quality of living. Mm. So it's entirely different.
Chalk and
fact,
cheese.
To put it into perspective, this net migration is still the equivalent of a city the size of York, whose history obviously stretches back thousands of years.
Iboricum, wasn't it? It's Roman era.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. I believe so, yeah. Of course, Jorvik under the Vikings. But no, you know, forget about our history. We're just going to create a new town every year with migrants. And of course, hollow out our own towns because many people are leaving. And in fact, some of the reality here is talked about by Migration Watch, and it says nearly 1.5 migrants from India, Bangladesh and Pakistan arrived in Britain between June 2020 and June 2025. Just a 250,000 left Britain in the same period, net migration of 1.146 million, which is massive. I don't understand what a million Indians adds to Britain. I've seen what India is like. And what happens, as we can see from Swindon outside, is that they recreate the conditions of India. That's exactly what happens, especially considering they live in their own communities and push out other people, right?
And Bangladesh and Pakistan.
We know all about the problems that they've caused.
They just
yeah.
recreate that.
Bangladeshis.
He took a walk down Manchester Road mm-hmm. for a short video.
I did.
And it was horrible.
Mm-hmm. Bangladesh is, you know, the nation associated with things like acid attacks. Pakistan, of course, is perpetually associated with the grooming gangs. This adds nothing to our country. This is not GDP generating either, because they don't contribute economically. In fact, in London, Bangladeshis and Pakistanis are more likely to be living in poverty than even Black Caribbeans or Black Africans. So the argument that they're adding anything is insane to me. Here's the Centre for Migration Control saying nearly 850,000 visas were granted in the last 12 months. And the number that went to doctors was just 7,200. So the doctor and engineer argument is sort of shrinking, isn't it?
I'd be willing to bet that of that 7,200, quite a few were fraudulent anyway.
I would imagine so. How many of them were legitimately qualified, I wonder?
That is an insane number. Mm-hmm. We must be mad, literally mad, to have done such a thing. Well, we haven't, right? It's a small cabal of people at the top that are doing it to us against our will. But what an insane number. Remember what our population, if it were normal or normalised, would be, what, 60 million, 65, 70 million top, something like that?
In that ballpark? Are you talking about if there wasn't migrants in the country, if it was just the British people?
Well, if it's England, if
it
was Wales,
60
it's
odd, isn't
45
it?
Million.
Is it that, been about, is it as low as that?
Yeah.
Is it?
For the past 30, 40 years. Yeah.
So to just whack on 800,000 here and 1.1 million there, that's crazy.
And this isn't also counting all of the people who are going to be overstaying visas, disappearing into the system.
You know, all these numbers are lowballed, yeah.
Yeah, we have a certain idea mm-hmm. of the amount of illegal immigrants who are in the country according to official records. Those who are actually recorded or caught or put into the system. Who knows how many just get into the country and then disperse?
Well, we don't have numbers for the people who've never interacted with the system, do we? You know, the people who've successfully got in the country illegally and were not caught at any point.
Now they just work cash in hand at a barbershop.
Mm-hmm. And the
or
best,
a vape shop.
The best estimates that I've seen are stuff that refers more to sewage output and phone, unironically, and the amount of phone contracts in the country as well.
Supermarkets.
Yeah, well. Supermarkets. All of that being massively over what you would expect if we only had the official population in the country that we have recorded. So there's at least probably 2, 3, 4, 5 million extra people in the country that aren't picked up by any of these figures.
Mm-hmm. A true figure is something like you add up all everything, the data that comes out from, say, Tesco's and Sainsbury's and Asda for toilet roll, for example, and that will give you a truer reading than anything the Home Office
And people in Britain as well.
And water usage, right?
Also, people in Britain now that don't use toilet roll.
Well, there's that. Yeah, there's that as well.
It's not the perfect.
Right. It's not even the perfect. Right.
That's even going to lowball it. So it's worth mentioning as well that refugees and people granted refugee status, usually this is the on this hand side is how many years they've been in the country, and obviously the percentage of them in these income brackets. So. For the largest one is less than £10,000 a year, which means you're a significant net financial negative. And you only start really contributing if you're the right-hand side of this orange bar. So that is such a small minority of people. That's what, less than 5% after 8 years, perhaps?
Yeah, net tax contribution, as opposed to the benefits that you take from the benefits that we get from the system, is about £41,000, if I remember correctly. So you have to be earning, on average, about 41 grand.
Maybe even not the orange, it would be...
The black.
The black and the...
The black and the purple.
Purple, yeah. So that's a small sliver. But the rest of them, we're paying for ourselves. And, of course, these people are known to cause so many problems, many asylum seekers. Of course, Axel Rudabagana, whatever his name is, the son of Rwandan asylum seekers. So what we're doing is we're paying for people to murder children for us. Great, thanks. And speaking of the finances, Leo here has actually got a good example of it stifling innovation. So Ocado started using robots and automation. He's got a very long post here. But because of the wage being so low, because we're importing all of the cheap labor, like it's similar to sort of how slavery in the ancient world used to stifle economic innovation and it contributed to economic stagnation. The same thing is going on here, that without the financial pressures to innovate, well, people don't. They just use the cheap labor to do it that way. Whereas we could have a situation where, you know, we have automation and robots doing it with no need to have immigration at all in the first place. We can have lots of jobs filled, you know, even with just the white British population. But we can't even get to that point now because migration is preventing us from transitioning into the natural progression of our economy, basically.
And this is essentially, and I don't want to play into slave narratives or anything like that, because frankly, at this point, I don't care. Sorry, I don't care about what may have happened to your ancestors hundreds of years ago. I don't. But it is essentially an evolution of that same process. Of
same sort of philosophy.
Of saying, of those in the elite upper class, when they become too decadent, when they are too disconnected from those beneath them, when they don't have any noblesse oblige, they decide, well, it would be a lot cheaper for us to just import a load of foreigners that can essentially be our slaves. This is slavery under a different name.
And it's because you pay them a small wage.
Indentured slavery.
Yeah. Indentured servitude, you could say. And it means that they are entirely beholden to us, and we can just get whatever we want for as cheap as possible. And who cares about the consequences? I mean, that's basically what happened to Rome. Mm-hmm. When all of a sudden, like, the average Roman would have looked about and gone, why is everyone in Rome Syrian?
There was that famous study, wasn't there, that saw the replacement of Romans in Rome that preceded the collapse of the Roman Empire. It's interesting, isn't it?
It's a recurring thing throughout history, because apparently after a certain point of civilizational peaking, then your leaders just go completely insane.
You can check out my epochs on Tiberius Gracchus if you're interested in a true deep dive and quotes from Plutarch and stuff on that very issue.
Yeah, that's unplugged. That
yeah, there is quite, but by the end of the Roman Empire, there's quite a lot of like Roman philosophers and thinkers and writers just complaining about how foreign everyone is, isn't there?
By the end of the Roman Republic.
So the final thing I wanted to look at is, of course, all of this was done because of my GDP, which we have very clear data here, and the forecasts into the future even. It's pretty much stagnant, right? Before mass migration, GDP growth was 4 or 5%, and you know, every 10 years, the size of our economy would potentially double, right? And so this stagnant GDP growth is not normal. And in fact, it's a law of mathematics, and you know, it's easier to explain this at a personal level. If a millionaire only grew their wealth by £15,000, you'd say they had a bad year that year, right? That's not very much money. Whereas, you know, with an economy, if it's only growing 1.5% and it's worth, what is it, 2.9 trillion, something like that, that's disastrous. You've massively failed, and probably the only reason there's not degrowth is because of innovation in technology and things like that that are propping it up. And so the real effect is that immigration is making you poorer, it's making life more dangerous, it's causing fractures in your society, and it's only going to get worse because more Europeans are leaving, more white British people are leaving, and more foreigners are coming in. And of course, no one's addressing the fact really in the mainstream that this is no success. And in fact, the figures are still more or less the same. It's just that more people are leaving.
And ultimately ends in a sectarian nightmare. That's the worst. That's sort of the most terrifying thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
You end up with South Africa or Yugoslavia style situation.
If this carries on, that'll be inevitable. That'll be our future, guaranteed.
Thanks, Boris.
With the GDP, isn't it true that after this budget as well, is it debt to GDP is going to rise to its highest ever?
I would imagine so, yeah, because there's going to be a lot of
Deficit spending is going to be near enough to like 40% of total GDP or something. I might be getting that wrong, but if you want to correct me, please let me know in the comments.
I know that one in every pound spent by the government is spent on interest, which Rachel Reeves herself admitted in her budget, and also that our debt to GDP ratio is something like 83% at the minute.
I thought it was more. I thought it was like 100.
Oh, percent. Yeah.
But yeah, our national debt is something like 2.5 trillion.
Mm-hmm. Which is why our taxes need to go up. Which is why we're all poor. Which is why the system is designed to keep you poor. They constantly want to be propping up all of these people by taking money from you, and then they wonder why the GDP doesn't grow when all of your money is being taxed away from you, so you have no disposable income to spend anything on.
Well, they could cut spending, but the government front bench won't do that because their own backbenchers will coup them into non-existence. Mm-hmm. So on we go. Round and round we go.
I guess so.
Brilliant.
Well, let's go through some of the super chats after that cheery and breezy segment.
Sorry about that. I've been on a big long run of positive.
Oh, mine's not going to make. I was going to say Harry's is darker, much darker.
Mine's not going to make anybody feel any better. So Arcadia says, given the Home Office and Border Force has been ideologically captured, I would be inclined to distrust these statistics. Neither organisation officially records or differentiates by ethnicity. That is true. The only thing that we seem to have is EU, British, non-EU. Migration figures right now, and the overall numbers, as we discussed, are untrustworthy. Network just sends in $10. Thank you very much. Max Grable, I decided to up and leave after university 5 years ago. I could see the writing on the wall, but I'm genuinely astounded how effectively Labour has managed to flush it all down the esser. I wish you courage from Switzerland. Well, I mean, obviously this is also heavily to do with the Conservative betrayal and the Boris wave, but yeah, Labour aren't making it any better either. I can understand for any young person the temptation to move away and go to somewhere that they think is better. The worry for me is that one, I wouldn't abandon the homeland like that, and two, this is coming everywhere. This is the general trend of politics right now. We are in the age of mass migration. I would like to move that to the age of remigration, but I don't have any power right now. I don't have any political power outside of this platform.
You can only hide so long in Switzerland, Max. Why don't you come back and fight the good fight?
And last one, we've got Okchigdor says, if the West collapses economically, will the immigrants go home like in Rome?
Not all of them went home.
Yeah, not all of them went home. And frankly, even a collapsed West will still probably be nicer for them than whatever shithole they came from. So it will come down to remigration. They have to be pushed out of the country. Some people don't like that. Some people think it makes their tummies go icky. But that's just how it has to be.
It is the peaceful option.
Well, it's just a far-right fantasy. It just simply will not happen. Impossible.
And we were so kind to Nigel during that segment as well. So we've taken a look at the massive replacement that is going on in the UK right now with the huge amount of immigrants coming in and the massive amount of British people going out, leaving this country, and you would think that any sane person would see that as an absolute travesty, a tragedy of the highest order, one of the worst things to ever happen in history, that one of the greatest countries that once headed the greatest empire the world has ever seen has been torn down to such an extent. Some people don't believe that. Some people actually look around and see that this is a good thing and would be willing to trade their own countrymen for the sake of having exotic foreign foods, which actually aren't even really exotic foreign foods in the first place.
And haven't we got the recipes?
We do have the recipes.
So.
And actually, we made the recipes in the first place.
Well, in this example you've got here, that comes from Scotland, doesn't it?
Yes. And that's where I'm going to be talking about today, the kinds of people who are more than happy to sacrifice you, your family, your ancestry, your history, your culture, and your future for the sake of their delicious foreign slop, and the consequences of that going back a very, very long time. In the most recent news story that Piers Morgan has been involved in, he was in an interview with Tucker Carlson, where he was interviewing Tucker, and on it they got onto the consequences of mass migration, and Tucker asked him a very simple question regarding the demographic replacement, which is, what do you actually have now that you didn't have before all these people arrived that makes this country better? What has been improved by these hordes of third worlders showing up on your doorstep? And of course, the only thing that Piers could go for, the only thing that matters to vile scum like himself, is food. And he doubled down on this when criticized on social media by saying, "There are a lot of white English people I would happily trade for a good weekly chicken tikka masala." Would anybody like to...
What a morally evil thing to think, let alone say out loud. Oh, I thought the trade... He actually says trade. I trade them. Oh, sorry, I thought the trading people was a bad thing. Wasn't it? Isn't it? I thought that. What a, on many levels, what a deplorable, truly deplorable thing to say.
So
I'm trying, mental. I'm trying mental. Not to FedPost or libel here.
Everybody so in I'm gonna the chat, stay quiet. Please FedPost in your mind. Keep it internal. Keep it in your heart. We all have a Fed poster in our hearts. Sadly, YouTube would not be happy if you were to put it into the chat, so please don't. Either way, he's putting forward this idea that all that happens is you trade a few English people and you get food in return. Bing, bang, bosh, done. That's the trade. That's what you get. And people have been trying to make this argument for a long time. So I thought we'd go through a little bit of the history of this, of people who are willing to sacrifice their own history and countrymen for the foreigners, the kind of arguments that they've made, and then also go through the actual trade that is made. What happens when you sacrifice your own people on the altar of multiculturalism and its wide variety of exotic restaurants, which actually were mostly foods that we made in the first place because we went over to the foreign countries, we tried eating their food, and it killed us because it was literally covered in feces most of the time. So we decided to make nice, clean versions of it. And also, we didn't need their foreign slop in the first place because British food is the best. It's time to get over this blood libel that, for the sake of not people not liking the idea of beans on toast, means we need to ethnically replace ourselves and have foreign rape gangs come over. No, beans on toast is delicious. Beef Wellington is delicious. Sunday roast is delicious. Everything the British make, food-wise, for the most part, is delicious, and you have simply been psyoped into thinking that it isn't, so that you'll justify having an Indian takeaway or a Chinese on every corner in this country. Anyway, with that divergence out of the way, so what's been going on? Well, we can actually go back through old newspaper archives. They are a wonderful resource, and people have been doing that over the past few days, particularly this account, Tempest Vista, who has been going through old newspaper archives and discovering the wondrous joys of diversity and all of the benefits and strengths that it's brought us over the past 100 years. And yes, I mean that, 100 years, because this goes back way further than the 90s. This wasn't Blair. This goes way back further than the 60s. Enoch Powell didn't know the half of it. This goes back before the Second World War. This can be traced as far back as the 1919 race riots, the colour riots in Liverpool and Cardiff, which we'll get onto later on. So let's just see what kind of benefits that we got straight away and the political response to them. Well, back in 2016, we'll start now and work our way back. We were told that passengers needed to see it, say it, sorted.
I hate that messaging so much.
Because of the threat of railway terror, that was a classic one back in 2016. That was before the Manchester Arena bombings. It was after the Bataclan, though.
And I remember when that first came out, I was travelling, I'd commute into London from Essex, from Havering every day. And I remember when that first came on, I was like, I sort of couldn't believe my ears.
It's a bit Orwellian in a sense. And then blasted.
I would also say, if you see anything suspicious or anything wrong, do text this number. I was thinking of going through Barking in Stratford. I was thinking of texting them saying, yeah, my carriage is full of Indian people.
Can
suddenly.
You remove them, please?
Suddenly.
Good luck. Funny that message never appears when I'm going down to the West Country, down to my way, where it's still 95% white. It's funny that they don't play it there, isn't it? Sorry.
Well, it's also funny that it doesn't work. Even now in Canterbury, we had the terror train attack just a few weeks ago. So that didn't work. Great job. 2005, Nick Lowles of Searchlight, later of Hope Not Hate, discusses grooming gangs, admitting that anti-racists maintained a general silence on the issue and that the BNP had played a tactical blinder by talking about a real and not perceived problem. Of course, this was not a problem because of the fact that the the grooming gangs existed in the first place, it was actually a problem to scumbags like Nick Lowles because it gave the BNP a foot in the door politically. Because they were the only ones willing to talk about it, and they'd been talking about it since the 1990s.
Imagine the cowardice of people at that time where they're just like, you know what, there's systematic rape of children going on at the hands of Pakistani men we brought into the country. Let's just not talk about it. Just pretend it's not going on for the sake of my career and for the easiness of my life.
To make me feel better. And
imagine what it takes, the logic in your mind, that the problem isn't rapists, it's Nick Griffin, who's noticed the rapists.
I mean, that is literally the calculation they make. It's worse to notice racial tensions and racial problems that are real and are there. And they even admit it. I mean, what this is an admission that they see it too. They know it's happening. They choose to keep it from you. Anytime anyone in the mainstream media denies that this is happening, anytime that Piers Morgan tries to divert the conversation away from this so that he can talk about his yummy nom nom foods, know that this is what's going on. He knows. He knows. He just thinks the calculation of your daughters get raped, so I get my food, is worth it, so that he can get cheap labor cleaning his house. That's the calculation. That's how much these scumbags hate you. Back in 2000, asylum manager Robin Rennie states that the coming of asylum seekers has always had a positive effect, and that critics were downright evil and were facing accusations of having vested interests in causing problems within their communities. This is always another classic line that they like to go through. You noticing the problem is actually you causing the problem. Racial tensions only arrive when white people, for no reason at all, decide, I don't like you because of the color of your skin. I'm going to make up stories about you. That is the logic being presented there still see today.
The idea that noticing it, that is really, really the problem. Like when I've talked often, even in the last segment, mentioned a nightmarish South African or Yugoslavian future, and lefties and traitors and commies will say, you would love that, wouldn't you? That's what you want.
You're trying to cause division.
Yeah, it's like, no, the exact opposite. I'm warning against that. That's the last thing I want. That's why I'm saying it now.
That's why we want political solutions to these sorts of things rather than all-out race war, right? Because it would be devastating for everyone involved.
And this despite the fact that the year before, if I check, I believe it's the same man, yes, Robin Rennie spoke about in 1999 how there were problems being caused by the asylum system because there needed to be more housing for them, and the government was announcing plans to house more asylum seekers in Essex to help relieve pressure on other areas of the country. This is a Labour classic. We complained about it when it was old Angela Rayner saying that we needed to disperse more asylum seekers so that everybody takes their fair share. This has been a problem going back at least 26 years. And these were asylum seekers from Kosovo, Chechnya, Afghanistan, Somalia, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Albania, Ethiopia, and the Congo. Exactly where you want these people coming from.
Countries that we have no business with and would be better off never letting anyone from any of those countries in our country ever.
If you notice, that's just 2 years after Blair got in. So already within 2 years, it's a thing, a significant, noticeable thing.
Well, already the year after Blair got in 1998, there were Islamists decrying the end of British tolerance as a hysterical reaction, with Omar Bakri Mohammed of Al-Muhajran calling for the establishment of an Islamic state in Britain. So, but Robin Rennie, echoing the sorts of things that we hear all the time these days, said even at the time that there was no problems caused by these people, you were wrong for saying that there was a problem. The problem only arrived when English people said, hold up, I don't want these people in our community for no reason. No reason at all. Going back to 1991, so this is before Blair. This is during the, would this have been John Major? In 91, or would Thatcher have still been hanging on at that point?
Thatcher, I think it would be early John Major. Thatcher, I think, is the Christmas New Year of 1990 to 1991, around that time. Gulf War One.
So this is pre-Blair.
This is about John Major's time.
So this was in 1991. The campaign against racism and fascism were criticising the BNP for pulling a campaign in Rochdale which claimed that special privileges and constant handouts were being given to the Asian community. The BNP was said to be bothered by the growth of militancy in the Asian community. 1991. BNP being the only people who were willing to call this out, that we see 14 years down the line, Nick Lowell saying, yeah, we knew there was a problem all along. We already knew there was a problem. The grooming gangs were real. The BNP were right. Our problem was not talking about it. Not because we actually give a shit about your children being abused, but actually because we just don't want the BNP to have any political power. 1991.
It's interesting that in nearby Oldham in 2001, there were riots because of the privileges provided to the Asian community there.
Yeah, they're basically housed and paid to abuse your children. That's how the system works. Going back all the way now to 1980, a terrorist housed in Birmingham was set to become a campaign base to win aid for Mujahideen guerrillas fighting Russian troops in Afghanistan. A Birmingham shopkeeper said that £8,000 had already been sent from Britain to buy weapons for the guerrillas. Like, you can say, well, at the time, they were allies in the fight against the Soviet Union. Yes. Why does it need to be in Birmingham? The Mujahideen, that's where Bin Laden started. That's where he came to prominence, am I right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, so we were funding them. Our money, which could have gone back into our own economy, was being taken, siphoned off, and given to them, the terrorists. Great. Fantastic. 1980. Jumping back a ways now, 1961. The Labour Party prepare to deal with the problems of Commonwealth immigration, worried that the rate of immigration is too high. In 1961, there were additional concerns that immigration was yet another problem which could divide the Labour Party. Now in this, it's interesting if you actually read this. Can you zoom in a little bit, please, Samson? Oh, okay. Either way, here we go. You can see here that in the actual article, the party was a bit undecided as to what to do about all of this. But then a 16-year-old Mr. Harry Cohen from Selly Oak, a truth from the mouth of babes, got up and gave a speech talking about how awful it was that Labour was even talking in such a way because he was campaigning to get rid of colour prejudice and immigration control.
Who cares? Yeah, shut up.
He was then later commended for giving the bravest speech of the conference. 1961. Interesting that, isn't it?
Interesting. When they crack out the kids, you know that someone's trying to manipulate you, aren't they?
Yeah. 1961 again, Sir Cyril Osborne calls for controls on immigration into Britain, stating that if the present rate of immigration continues, the British would cease to be a European nation and would become a mixed Afro-Asian society. 1961. And that's at the tiny rates of immigration comparatively that they had back then. I would assume that this is also going off of the idea of birth rates. Even back then.
I mean, 61 is already pre Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech. So, mm-hmm. I mean, Enoch Powell himself said that he'd been saying those things that he said in that Rivers of Blood speech, which was, the late 60s. He'd already been saying it, and others had been for years. That just happened to explode that time when he said it. People had already been saying it for years at that point. So,
and people had been saying it for 7 years at least up to that point. Then we go all the way back to 1955. Birmingham City Council becomes concerned about the effect of uncontrolled immigration, citing a serious housing problem and the possibility of immigrants finding themselves out of work thousands of miles from their homes. So even 1951, 10 years after the end of the Second World War, this was already a problem.
And the same exact problems that we still have today.
Except on such a small scale in comparison to what we have now. But the fact that they weren't resolved then, the fact that this wasn't solved then, is why we are facing the legacy of it now. That's why we're living in the ashes, because this was not resolved at the time, because even back then, the people leading us were cowards, spineless cowards. But that's just the political responses. That's the media responses. That's what we got from the media talking about how the politicians were responding to it. What about the actual problems that these people were causing back then? Again, I'm going to take us back to more recent times and work backwards from there. So this is an interesting J'accuse article from January of this year, written by Mithras, who's an account on Twitter that you should follow. And he writes about the historical context of Pakistani migration and early stage evidence of grooming gangs. This is what inspired Tempest Vista to go through all of these archives and start to record it and publish it on Twitter himself. Some of the interesting information that he gives here statistically, which is relevant, is related to something that Jenrick had said recently before this. Jenrick said that the scandal started with the onset of mass migration and later states this disastrous experiment has continued for 30 years. This ties into the same narrative that Farage uses about immigration, the idea it was all fine and dandy until Tony Blair opened the borders from 1997 onwards. This is simply factually incorrect when discussing Pakistani rape gangs. The Alexis J report dates the onset of the mass rape atrocity to the 1970s at least, a time when Tony Blair was still an Oxford undergraduate. Between 1951 and 2001, the Pakistani population in Britain experienced remarkable growth, increasing from 10,000 in 1951 to 119,000 in 1971, and reaching 747,000 by 2001. Approximately 80% of British Pakistanis trace their origins to the Mirpur district of Azad Jammu and Kashmir. Among these emigrants, 71% visit their homeland annually, 67% regularly send remittances, and 79% express a desire to return permanently.
Oh, we can why help them with that.
Yeah, why can't we just send them back then? They'd be happy. We'd be grateful. We'd be doing them a favour. The city of Bradford, by 1944 to 45, there were estimated to be 30 Indo-Pakistanis in the city. By 1964, the city had a total population of 296,000, with 12,000 residents being Pakistani, 5,000 of whom originated from Mirpur. Am I pronouncing that right? Who cares? This sort of growth is typical for towns and cities in the north and Midlands of England with large Pakistani populations in 2025. By 1970, the Pakistani population of Bradford was estimated at 21,000, and by 2021, the Pakistani population of Bradford Metropolitan District totaled 139,553. An exponential growth. And with it comes all of those problems that we were discussing before about housing, but also with it comes the actual problems that we all know and are familiar with. So back in 2006, starting from here, the government criticised for the management of offenders after two girls were tortured and raped for 3 hours in a Reading hotel by a South London drugs gang in 2005. These are the problems that happen when you have large foreign populations come in to your country who actually basically don't have rules or laws where they come from and are not ready or civilised for our laws and our rules and our culture. The girls were then taken to a park where one was stabbed to death and the other one was shot in the head. And there's the victim there. In 2001, the Council of Mosques are forced to say sorry to a vicar in an attack after a church was stormed by a gang of up to 50 Asian youths. The gang had dragged rubbish into the church and set light to it, smashed the stained glass window, tossed hymn books around, and racially abused the vicar. Fantastic. Are you feeling stronger? Are you feeling enriched? I'm not.
It's not just our strength, it's our greatest strength, remember? Yeah.
Robin Rennie, the asylum guy, said that there was the only positives. Only positives.
Our friends and neighbours.
Yeah. 1998, a white boy aged 15 years old clubbed, beaten by a gang of 15 Asians. All of this is just stuff that you can find going into newspaper archives. And it just keeps going. It goes back and back and back. Let's see, 1998. This would have been around the time of the Steve Lawrence inquiry. Correct? Where was the inquiry about this guy? Where was the inquiry about this 1994 murder of a 15-year-old boy, Richard Everett, by 11 Asian youths, where even the police said that the killing may have been racially motivated? Was there an inquiry on this? Was there something talking about how the police were institutionally anti-white off of the back of this, how England was an institutionally anti-white country for allowing something like this to happen, because I would argue it is, and it has been for a very, very long time. Stephen Lawrence, though, he gets his day in court. He gets his day in the sun after he's murdered, and they upend the entire policing system off of the back of that.
Make his mum appear.
Yeah. Why not? 1989. Gangs of Muslim men toured daytime discotheques kidnapping Sikh girls to use as sex slaves, according to what a Birmingham court heard. 13 Sikh men, members of the Sheer Punjab vigilante gang, were on trial for trying to protect their own girls. Wow. 1987. A Yemeni father is interrogated because of how he felt no guilt, because he tricked his own daughters into becoming child brides after sending them on holiday. He sold his daughters off for money to people that they had never met. Confronted at his flat, he said, "My girls will learn to enjoy it. Your laws can't touch me." An integration success story. Clearly. Clearly. 1981, a Manchester girl arrested alongside a Pakistani student at Islamabad Airport, Pakistan, on drug charges. She claimed that she'd fallen into a love trap and that her boyfriend had made her a member of a smuggling group. Familiar? Does this sound like the exact same thing that we've been hearing for decades? This is the go-to method. You trick them into thinking that you're in a dedicated relationship and then you force them into a life of crime with you. Brilliant. 1972, and this is a particularly bizarre one. Jury finds that a 32-year-old Jordanian doctor was charged with murdering three children and attempting to murder another child and two nurses at a Blackpool hospital was unfit to plead charges because the man, Ahmad Alami, was described as a paranoid schizophrenic. Also, very strange in here, it says in here, pending the... Oh, my goodness. Can we zoom in on this as well, please, Samson? Thank you. This is a particularly bizarre one here. Pending the decision, Alami, son of the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem...
Blimey.
So, this guy, the son of the Grand Mufti, was able to get into the country and then managed to blag his way into a doctor's position, despite being a paranoid schizophrenic, and murdered three girls, at which point he was unable to plead. He should have just been hanged. Sorry, that... No, there's no reason for men like this to keep breathing. Sorry, don't care if that hurts your feelings. Oh, but what about the overstepping of the state? Don't care. Don't care, he deserved to die.
Also, the idea that because you're mentally ill, you escape the hangman's noose... is insane to me.
There's more reason.
Well, especially paranoid schizophrenia. Can you name anyone who's recovered from that?
No.
No, me neither.
1966, a Pakistani man accused of indecently assaulting a 15-year-old girl who had gone to his house to cook for him. The man said, "It isn't a shame at all what I have done. It was nice," and that he would do it with many English girls. 1966. 1965, two black men accused of being white slave traders at a Manchester court. It was alleged they had picked up girls in clubs and coffee bars, where they were then driven to Bradford and sold to Pakistanis and others for £10 and £20 each. 1959. A 40-year-old Pakistani male abducts and commits three indecent offences against a 15-year-old girl in Accrington. 1955. Three Pakistani men accused of having carnal knowledge of a 15-year-old Middlesbrough girl. Do you get the point yet? Do you get the point? There wasn't any period after the war where we were just accepting the good ones and everything was going hunky-dory. This has always been what they do. This is always how it goes with these people. And Piers Morgan sees this and goes, as long as I get my curry, as long as I get my tikka masala, I'm happy to make any excuse. Any excuse for this.
So I can still physically see Tower Bridge, so everything's all right. That was a clip I saw with his Tucker interview when Tucker started talking about demographics. He said, look, London is different. And here's Morgan points out, look, I can see Tower Bridge, though.
Amazing.
Everything's fine. What are you talking about, Tucker?
Bridge would collapse, is it? It's what people he's on.
Yeah,
about.
Of course. What a mad thing. What a mad thing to say and think.
And of course, this goes from before the Second World War as well, because while immigration did massively expand following the end of the Second World War, it was still a small trickle. We still had a very small population prior to the Second World War of foreigners from African and Middle Eastern countries. And even in those tiny, tiny populations that we had back then, guess what? They were still doing the same thing. Blackpool, 1930. A traffic in white girls by coloured men on Merseyside. An Indian, formerly a conjurer, at a temple of mysteries at Blackpool, married his white wife in a mosque, sentenced to 6 months of hard labour for living in part on the earning of a 20-year-old white woman. Mothers had complained that their daughters were missing and were later found at this man's premises. Young girls should be warned against answering certain advertisements and entering into the employment of foreign men. Why? That's because he was tricking them into coming, thinking that they were going to be getting jobs, and then getting them into some form of indentured servitude, and then selling them off as prostitutes. And it goes even further beyond before that as well, all the way back to the race riots of 1919. This is an excellent article by Wilhelm Iverson, formerly known as American Croghan. I would really recommend anybody to read through this. I can't go through the whole thing. I've already taken a lot of time because of how long and in-depth the article is. But of course, he also goes back through a lot of the reports from newspapers at the time of the 1919 riots in Liverpool and Cardiff, and you can see a very similar pattern of violence and abuse emerge back then. But he also addresses a lot of the more modern narratives that somebody like Piers Morgan might want to throw out as response to all of this, by saying that there's a narrative of local males being sexually jealous and frustrated by foreign men, and that's a narrative that various academics like to entertain regarding these race riots, and even to this day, many of them will try to argue that these girls who are entrapped by foreign gangs are actually just going into these gangs because they like the men. Because they really are the boyfriends. They willingly accepted being prostituted out to all of these men. And the only reason that you, the white man watching this right now, have any problem with it is because of the fact that you're sexually jealous. You're jealous that the white girls prefer the foreign men. And he addresses a lot of that, going back into this context, saying about how if you actually read the newspaper archives, a lot of the people protesting mixed race relationships back then were other women. And that most of the women who engaged in this kind of stuff were of, quote, a certain temperament and, quote, a certain type of white woman, prostitutes. And that the men only tended to get involved when violence actively broke out. Most of it was instigated by the foreigners in the first place. And bear in mind, again, this is maybe when we had a population of 10,000 foreign people at most in the country, who are all congregated in port cities like Cardiff and Liverpool. And I'll just read an excerpt here. So, insofar as the most frequent context in which local women were associating with foreign men, consider that the Times had reported back in May on a police raid of a local foreign gambling house, a black gambling house. Quote, at midnight on Sunday, a gambling house in Chestnut Street, Liverpool, was raided by the police, and as a result, the 14, should I read the word, or I'll say blacks, and three white women appeared before the Liverpool stipendiary magistrate yesterday. It was stated that the blacks put up a desperate struggle before being arrested, and several of them appeared in court wearing bandages. The occupant of the premises was lined £25 with 2 months imprisonment for carrying on a gaming house. For assisting in its management, two other black men were fined £10 each. The other black men and the women were bound over. Five of the men were sentenced to 14 days imprisonment with hard labour for assaulting the police. So these were women associating with criminals. The Leicester Daily Post on the June 17th reported the locals became indignant and wrecked an Arab cafe that was clearly serving as a brothel. Mohammed Rabal, an Arab from Aden, was summoned to the Thames Police Court yesterday afternoon for allowing a restaurant kept by him in Cable Street, St George's East, to be frequented by women of loose character. The evidence of police officers was to the effect that white women of a certain class were in the habit of sitting in the place, getting into conversation with coloured men, leaving leaving with them and returning shortly afterwards. It was further alleged that acts of gross indecency took place in the shop. Incidentally, it was mentioned that the defendant's shop had since been wrecked by a crowd of indignant white men. The magistrate said that he was not clear in this case and dismissed the summons. Wilhelm carries on to say, considering the vague language here and that the summons was ultimately dismissed, this clipping may seem inconclusive to some. It may even appear that local men were in fact just jealous, so some explanation is required. These newspapers were not in the habit of explicitly stating certain indecent acts. You can read many newspaper clippings from the time. They all use some form of euphemism. But contemporary readers would have readily understood that the author was discussing prostitution, and indeed it was a commonly accepted fact that at this point that Maltese men in particular became well known for running cafe brothels in Blue Town, Cardiff, an area known to locals as Tiger Bay. And he carries on to talk about some other examples, and the greatest evil he's quoting here, the South Wales News, and I'll end on this part because I've gone quite a long time. Quoting the September 1916 issue of the South Wales News, said some of the following about the overall situation in Cardiff and the trafficking of young girls. The greatest evil of all is the importation into Tiger Bay of young girls from the hills and valleys of South Wales. They are tempted to come as domestic servants to the alien boarding houses, and it is not unusual to find sometimes as many as three or four of them from 15 to 17 years of age, ostensibly employed as domestics in a place packed to the roof with foreigners. Their degradation is all too frequently only a matter of weeks. They become part of the boarding house keeper's stock in trade, an attractive business asset, and if questioned on the subject, they will tell you that they are engaged or married to one of the lodgers. It is pitiable to see some of the victims of this revolting system. Everyone with whom I discussed the matter said the evil could not be exaggerated. It baffled description, and no terms that could be used would be too strong to denounce it. I came away with the firm conviction the authorities should absolutely prohibit the employment of white girls by aliens in this area. Because again, they were employing them, coercing them into prostitution, and then keeping them there through money and fear. That's as far back as 1916. The tiny population that we had back then was still doing the exact same thing. And Piers Morgan says this is all fine, so long as he can have a nice curry. Sorry, I went a bit over there, chaps, but I'll go through the Rumble rants and Super Chats. Random name, when I was a child here in Canada, we had cops come to the school to explain to us why the death penalty was wrong. Even as a child, I knew that was wrong. Also, subcontinental food is rancid. Your perennial reminder, Morgan's actions at the Mirror, likely got British soldiers killed in the Blair Bush War. True. The Fed Postie Goblins are trying to get me to say no-no words, but I'll stay strong for you, Harold. Thank you. Onto YouTube. Given what has been done to the British people since the 1960s, it's quite frankly astonishing that the public has not carried out a V for Vendetta. I despair for our country. I told you no Fed posting. G'day again, as us Aussies are being hit hard by Islam. People say don't mess with the Irish Catholics. I'm telling you, don't enrage an Aussie Catholic. G'day, I'm liking the rage in Harry's voice here. We need to start a crusade like Gondor did in The Lord of the Rings. Shrinkflation has just hit bacon, by the way. I bought my regular pack and it's sliced so thin it's absolutely shocking. Just another day in Starmer's England. Bo, I'll host you in Zurich and you'll see what a country with controlled borders looks like. Meanwhile, I'll fight the good fight with my Franks. And things are only going to get better when every system of governance collapses and we are scrambling to eat worms. Then the new golden age may germinate. All right. Sorry to go over, but let's go on to your segment, Bo.
Okay.
I'm sorry to depress everybody so much. I really highly recommend reading that article. It's excellent. And also
cheer us up, Bo. Save the day, Bo.
Well, so after those two really quite depressing and dark segments, hopefully a small ray of light coming out of the Donald, coming out of the United States. I know it's sort of modish to try and dunk on MAGA. And the Donald.
Please,
but,
just anything to cheer me up.
Right.
Anything, Bo.
And I do call out MAGA and the Donald when they do something I don't like his handling of the Epstein files, for example. That's much more Trump himself than the MAGA movement. But
it's a bit embarrassing to be a bit of a cheerleader and say, like, try and come up with any explanation. No, actually, being in the line of work that we're in, being critical when people make mistakes is the best thing you can do.
It's what you obviously should.
Yeah, you've got to, really. Just be honest. Like when Trump comes out and says, we have to have hundreds of thousands of Indians or Chinese because there aren't enough good Americans. No, I'll call that out. That's nonsense.
It's very insulting as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But by the same token, when he comes out with something good, I give him credit. I've said that a number of times. If AOC, if Ed Davey came out with something based, I'd give them credit for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Ed Davey did, which was...
Did he? What was that?
It was the train video.
Oh, that one, right.
Yeah. Where he's complaining about all of the youths playing their music loudly on the train.
Now, I think credit where it's due and criticism where it's due. Can't ask for any fairer than that, can you? So anyway, a little bit of ray of light from Donald J. Trump. He did a little message on Thanksgiving, because it's been Thanksgiving recently in the United States. Something we don't have in the UK or anywhere else in the world, really.
Yeah, we're very ungrateful.
Well, I mean, it is an American holiday, so...
Yeah, of course, yeah. It's just one of those things. Growing up in Britain, we're Americanized in all sorts of ways. Loads and loads of American TV and films and everything. It's one of those things. When you was a kid, you was like, why don't we have Thanksgiving? And your parents said... We just don't do that. It's not
our holiday. It'd be like Americans celebrating bonfire night or something. Right. It'd just be weird.
Yeah. And yet you still know all about it because of TV and films all the time. But anyway, so it was Thanksgiving in the United States recently. And Trump did quite a long Truth Social, which he also put on Twitter. And he said this. Shall I just read it in its full form? He said, "Very happy Thanksgiving salutation to all of our great American citizens and patriots who have been so nice in allowing our country to be divided, disrupted, carved up, murdered, beaten, mugged, and laughed at, along with certain other foolish countries throughout the world for being politically correct and just plain stupid when it comes to immigration. The official United States foreign population stands at 53 million, most of which are on welfare from failed nations and from prisons, mental institutions, gangs or drug cartels. They and their children are supported through massive payments from patriotic American citizens who, because of their beautiful hearts, do not want to openly complain or cause trouble in any way, shape or form. They put up with what has happened to our country, but it's eating them alive to do so. A migrant earning $30,000 with a green card will get roughly $50,000 in yearly benefits for their family. The real immigrant population is much higher. This refugee burden is the leading cause of social dysfunction in America. The leading cause of social dysfunction in America. Something that did not exist after World War II. Failed schools, high crime, urban decay, overcrowded hospitals, housing shortages, and large deficits, etc. As an example, hundreds of thousands of refugees from Somalia are completely taking over the once great state of Minnesota. Somalian gangs are roving the streets looking for prey as our wonderful people stay locked in their apartments and houses, hoping against hope they will be left alone. The seriously retarded governor of Minnesota, not just retarded, seriously retarded governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz, does nothing. Either through fear, incompetence, or both, while the worst congresswoman in our country, Ilhan Omar, always wrapped in her swaddling hijab, and who probably came into the USA illegally, in that you are not allowed to marry your brother, does nothing. Does nothing but hatefully complain about our country, its constitution, and how badly she is treated. When her place of origin is a decadent, backward and crime-ridden nation, which is essentially not even a country for lack of government, military, police, schools, etc. Even as we have progressed technologically, immigration policy has eroded those gains and living conditions for many. I will permanently pause migration from all third world countries and allow the US system to fully recover. Terminate all of the millions of Biden's illegal admissions, including those assigned by Sleepy Joe's auto pen, and remove anyone who is not a net asset to the United States or is incapable of loving our country. End all federal benefits and subsidies to non-citizens of our country. Denaturalize migrants who undermine domestic tranquility, and deport any foreign national who is a public charge, security risk, or non-compatible with Western civilization." It's quite broad. I like it. "These goals will be pursued with the aim of achieving a major reduction in illegal and disruptive populations, including those admitted through an unauthorized and illegal auto pen approved process. Only reverse migration," some might call re-migration, "only reverse migration can fully cure this situation. Other than that, Happy Thanksgiving to all, except those that hate, steal, murder, and destroy everything that America stands for. You won't be here for long. Signed, Donald J. Trump.
I can imagine him saying this at the dinner table with his family present, just they're all waiting to tuck into their turkey. And
I imagine that's what happened. He actually had his phone just like transcribing it as he was saying it to them. That's a hell of a run-on sentence.
Yes.
Oh, it's I mean, people, when you're important enough, you literally can have someone that just dictates what you say. Right? I wonder if he did actually type that. It does sound like almost a stream of consciousness, like he was just
It
saying.
Does, yeah.
It sounds like when your uncle's a few glasses of brandy down at the dinner table.
It's great. I mean, notwithstanding the HB1 thing and the Chinese, hundreds of thousands of Chinese students, notwithstanding that, that's good, right? He's saying
it's a great
he's saying
today,
the right
yeah.
things. I mean, I'll take those things if you actually do it. Just pausing all migration into the United States from the third world, or, you know, quite broad strokes of the brush there. Anyone that isn't compatible with sort of the national interests of the United States.
The proof will be in the Thanksgiving pudding, won't it? In that, I like what he's saying here. It's lots of good stuff in here, and it's the kind of stuff that is necessary. It's good to even have this advertised, but then it's another thing to be able to do all of that, because this is very, very ambitious, and I'm not entirely sure whether he's going to achieve this to the degree that is necessary, even with the best will in the world.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully it will please Bannon a bit. I'll take it as when somebody like Nigel Farage comes out and says something a little bit based. It's like, you've got to take the scraps where you can. If it moves the conversation, that's something. Whether you will actually get rid of 53 million odd people in the United States, which got no real right to be there, is another issue, of course.
Well, I don't want Trump to turn into the boy who cried wolf on this sort of stuff. But the benefit for Trump is, if he wants to actually have reverse migration, re-migration, then there are lots of people and lots of institutions in America who are willing to draw up legislation for that exact purpose, who already have. I've been in touch with a place called the White Papers Policy Institute that have a very comprehensive breakdown of how they could get re-migration to work in America to try and reverse the demographic change, get all of the illegals out. If Trump is really serious about this, his government should be getting in touch with those kinds of organizations and actually getting the legislation drawn up. We always say NGOs write all of this stuff for the politicians. Get an NGO that's actually on side for once and get them to draw it up, and then do it. Just do it. You're in power. Do it.
Well, it's going to be my last link, but talking about actually drawing up a genuine sort of policy in detail, Harrison Pitt, friend of the show, along with Rupert Lowe MP, at their organisation Restore Britain. I'm wearing a Restore Britain tie, if anyone's noticed that.
Oh my God, you are. I didn't notice.
Check it out. They've actually done exactly that. I've got a hard copy, which I'm going through. It's like 100 pages odd long. Very, very decent in-depth paper. And it's called Mass Deportations, Legitimacy, Legality and Logistics. I've got an actual physical hard copy of it. They sent Carl, but I'm reading through it. And I'll do a segment on it next week, probably, going through it. And so it's totally possible. The idea that it's impossible, it's a fait accompli. You can never get rid of these people. They're our problem now. And it's just not possible to remigrate many, many people. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. History is filled with examples, even in recent times, filled with examples of mass forced remigration all over the world.
Pakistan did it only a couple of years ago with Afghans, didn't it?
It happens all the time. The Chinese do it, the Russians do it, Pakistanis do it. In recent, very, very recent times, that is, let alone historically, going back way back when.
And the end
you
of the
can
second
do it. You just need political will to do it. Sorry, go.
I was just going to say, the end of the Second World War was just a series of massive migration population movements all across the continent. Yeah. These people are kicked out of this part of Europe, so they have to move over here. These people are kicked out of this part of Europe, so they have to move over here. It was a huge redrawing of the borders. Obviously, that was following a devastating war, but it shows that if you do have willpower, you can just do it. And this does not, or should not, I don't want it to, require a devastating war to enact.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the white flight, whether forced or not, out of places like...
Detroit.
Zimbabwe or South Africa, or many places.
I mean, there's been a massive ethnic cleansing of the white population in loads of cities in America. Eisenhower brought the bloody National Guard out to do it.
Or when people wanted, the native people of the subcontinent wanted all the white people out of places like India and Pakistan and Bangladesh. Oh, it's possible then. Okay, I see.
Well, again, using the example I gave of Eisenhower, even in the 50s, they were more than happy to do it to force white Americans into accepting demographic change. Not willing to do anything of the sort to protect white Americans, unless Donald Trump is willing to follow through on it. And you don't need to get the National Guard out to do such a thing.
Mm. Sorry to subject you to an image of Ilhan Omar, but it's just interesting that Trump calls her out by name as being... Yeah, I mean, just a classic example of a fifth columnist, isn't she? Just
is that real?
I'm not sure. I don't think it is. I mean,
I was going to say.
It's supposed to be a tweet from her, but I suspect this is a shop.
It looks like it.
I think this is a joke, guys. I hate to break it to you, pull the stars away from your eyes, but this is a joke.
Actually, I hope it's not real, to be honest. That's horrifying.
Yeah.
And Trump has been good on this stuff. He did a speech to the UN not too long ago, a few months ago. We covered it. I'm pretty sure I covered it on the State of Politics, certainly. Check out State of Politics. State of Politics. I think I covered it on here as well. I can't remember if I did. But Trump did a speech to the UN, and he basically said... It was like a 40-minute, hour-long speech or something like that. But the main two thrusts of it was that the green agenda is a hoax, a complete nonsense, and that mass immigration to the West, anyway, is a devastating, terrible thing, and it must be reversed. So, this is not the first time this Thanksgiving speech or address is not the first time he's been saying this. I mean, if Steve Bannon had his way, it would be number one on the agenda by... orders of magnitude. But recently, only in the last, few days, the State Department, I think someone must have covered this on Lotus Eaters, but just to show that the Trump administration is at least relatively serious about at least talking about it. The State Department, with a series of tweets here saying that mass migration is an existential threat to all of Western civilization.
True.
It's nice to have the White House or state mirroring our talking points. It's nice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right, you've got to take
time.
You've got to take the small wins where you can. I mean, it's not even a small win. Whether they actually do anything about it is something else. But moving the conversation is sort of the first part of it, right? If you can't even address,
afraid, yeah,
yeah.
People used to be so afraid to say we need to remove people from our country. Now, it's a pretty passé comment, to be honest, and in fact many relatively moderate people on the right are happy to say it now, and that is in part because of people moving the dialogue,
because in the process you start talking about illegal immigrants, well, the next thing is legal immigrants and the denaturalization of people that were born here, and on and on and on until you get your country back.
Mm-hmm. It's a long process, so, isn't it?
Unfortunately it will be, yeah. But yeah, a series of tweets here from the State Department. And what the State Department wants, the State Department usually gets. It's among the more powerful cabals of people in the entire world. The Pentagon and the US military is downstream from state, isn't it? Usually. even here they talk about the United... Look, there you go. In the United Kingdom, thousands of girls have been victimised in Rotherham, Oxford and Newcastle, to name but a few. In gangs involving migrant men. So that's more than our government was prepared to say. They talk about in Sweden, in Germany, all sorts of places. So, the only sort of, other than, hopefully this is just a purely positive segment, other than to say you do get out of Trump also sometimes multiculturalist, globalist type rhetoric as well, don't you? Like I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, the thing about we must have HB1s and Chinese because America, the United States with a population of hundreds of millions, hasn't got enough geniuses or something. Nonsense. obvious bullshit. So you do get some counter signals out of Trump and MAGA, other people in MAGA, but I'm just rooting for sort of the Bannon wing of MAGA to sort of get its way. I mean, times are ticking, Donald. Times are ticking. It's not long before the midterms.
You haven't got forever.
Yeah.
It's already been over a year since you were elected.
Let's get it going. Okay, what else have I got here? Oh, yeah, just the mainstream media. The mainstream media's reaction is, of course, to just re themselves inside out. One example is the BBC, where they just sort of report on this address he's made, and just try and throw shade at it. Oh, it comes in the wake of when an Afghan shot at two and killed at least one. Don't know the.
I think they're both died.
Have they both died now? An Afghan guy just murdered two National Guard members in Washington DC the other day, and he'd come over in a similar way than the United States had, where they brought over loads of people that had apparently been acting as translators and things for during our time in the occupation of Afghanistan, and so for whatever reason decided to bring loads of them over to the United States, even though the neo-Taliban regime said they had no intention of persecuting them, whether you can believe that or not. But the point is, a load of Afghans came over and one of them just murdered two people. What was his name? Ramanullah Lakhanwal. Okay. Trump says we're just going to try and stop. We're going to stop any more migration coming in from Afghanistan and other countries like it, and revisit all of their cases. If we have to send them back, we'll send them back.
It's insane to me that that was allowed in the first place. You lose a war in Afghanistan and then just like, yeah, come on in. I'm sure this won't cause any problems. Yeah. It's like, are you insane?
I mean, what Trump's saying here is just kind of completely reasonable. It should be completely a reasonable response. Right? It's the radical, insane response to ignore something like that.
To allow it to happen or encourage it.
Yeah.
We get called radicals for the sorts of things that we talk about and the sorts of things that we advocate, but it's way more radical and insane to encourage and cheer on the complete destruction of Western civilization. I mean, that's just how I see it, at least.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit from the man. Can you play this, Samson? I don't know what I need to...
On the best available information... The Department of Homeland Security is confident that the suspect in custody is a foreigner who entered our country from Afghanistan, a hellhole on earth. He was flown in by the Biden administration in September 2021 on those infamous flights that everybody was talking about. Nobody knew who was coming in. Nobody knew anything about it. His status was extended under legislation signed by President Biden. A disastrous president, the worst in the history of our country. This attack underscores the single greatest national security threat facing our nation. The last administration let in 20 million unknown and unvetted foreigners from all over the world, from places that you don't want to even know about. No country can tolerate such a risk to our very survival. An example is Minnesota, where hundreds of thousands of Somalians are ripping off our country and ripping apart that once great state. Billions of dollars are lost, and gangs of Somalians come from a country that doesn't even have a government, no laws, no water, no military, no nothing. As their representatives in our country preach to us about our Constitution and how our country is no good. We're not going to put up with these kind of assaults on law and order by people who shouldn't even be in our country. We must now re-examine every single alien who has entered our country from Afghanistan under Biden, and we must take all necessary measures to ensure the removal of any alien from any country who does not belong here or add benefit to our country. If they can't love our country, we don't want them. America will never bend and never yield in the face of terror. And at the same time, we will not be deterred from the mission these service members were so nobly fulfilling. That is why tonight I can announce that I have direct.
Okay, so it would be nice if our leaders would make similar noises. Again, I think it's just people that have got Trump derangement syndrome will just call all of that as insane racist bigotry stuff, but it's reasonable. It's a reasonable response to what's happening. Right, yeah, I would. Mm-hmm. In Bose, Britain, in Bose, United States, I would go much, much, much further, yeah. But
in Bose, Britain, there's...
It's the least you can ask for, right?
I mean, It is, yes.
I was just going to say, in Bose, Britain, there's no such thing as Fed posting.
Yeah. I would actually have true freedom of speech. Well, actually, you can't... There's always some limits, like...
Shouting fire in a crowded building.
That one, yeah. Mm. Or just, like, libel. Just calling someone, like, a paedophile or a murderer when they're not. Anyway.
That's getting off subject.
Yeah. I would have as much freedom of speech as absolutely possible. Yeah. But anyway, so thank you to 47 for saying these words. A tiny bit of ray of light in an otherwise very, very dark podcast this afternoon.
All right, I'll read through the... do we have any video comments, Samson?
I can't hear you if you're talking.
We've got a couple. I'll very quickly go through some Rumble rants. Thank you for reading that Trump tweet. It was a great start to my morning. You must have missed the first two segments then. Can I suggest a night emoji for the Rumble chat? No reason, obviously. I just thought it'd go nicely with an England flag. Wouldn't say anything that starts with day and ends with Us Volt. Trump's tweet was nothing short of epic. Also, where did Bo get his amazing mug? Real jealous here.
Don't know.
Found it.
Yeah, just found it.
Magic.
Is that a Zeus mug or is that a Bo mug? No one will know.
So, yeah, it's a Bo mug.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's hinting at anything here. Anyway, video comments.
Here's the All-American Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving table looks just like an English Christmas dinner table.
Wholesome.
It?
Wholesome, you've made me hungry.
That is a sufficiently sized gravy boat as well. Well done.
Yeah.
It's budget day, me lads, and Reeves, she has hot graft blood. So pour this in a nail and drink before that's shafted.
I saw this one yesterday as well.
Beautiful. Next
so
one.
So good we played it twice. This all looks very familiar, and I'm trying to figure out where it is. Lovely little heron.
Oh no, it's doo-doo water.
I look very pretty and peaceful. Mm,
it's very wholesome. I wish I could remember where that is, because I know I've been there, I just can't remember.
Well, it said Freddy's Weir, so you can figure that out.
There's probably lots of Freddy's Weirs around.
Never know.
Seriously, Harry.
Uh-oh.
These things really aren't that bad. But if it bothers you so much, don't do a soy face when you get it. Instead, get one of these and make a man face. By the way, I'm wondering if you guys would be able to get Matt Dillahunty onto your show and ask him what he really thinks about what new atheism has done to the world.
I'm not familiar with him, and I'm sorry if
I don't know who that is.
If I'm gonna get a switch for my missus for Christmas, I'm gonna have to soy face.
Yeah, what's the backstory to that? Have you been beefing with him on Twitter about switch or something?
No, my missus wants a switch for Christmas.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I'm gonna have to buy one. I'm gonna have to soy face as I do it.
Oh, okay.
It's the only way to go.
You don't have to soy face.
I do.
It's, okay. Oh, okay.
They, at the counter, they make you do it.
Do they?
Yeah.
At least it doesn't come with Zelda, so you don't have to do the full soy face.
Yeah. If you order it online as well, you have to send a picture of yourself soy facing it before they
won't send it
up. Purchase.
Otherwise.
Yeah.
Hey, Lucetas, I'm at Carlisle Castle. This keep, in particular, was built by King David I of Scotland.
You can see some amazing medieval wall art right here. That was just graffitied into the walls.
This leopard or lion wearing a crown, representing England, of course. There's a Yorkist rose right here. And there's a boar.
Can you have some water?
I get that reference.
That's awesome. We need to remind ourselves over and over and again, not only do we have a beautiful and historic country, it's also awesome. Britain's awesome. We've got awesome history. It's super cool.
I also like seeing drawings of medieval lions because it makes me feel better about my artistic ability. It's not great.
Hello, gentlemen. It's Thanksgiving here in beautiful Garrison, New York. I'm here at my son's house. We're getting ready to have our Thanksgiving dinner and wish him a happy 38th birthday.
Well, I hope you had a nice time. Yeah. Happy birthday to your son.
Yeah. Fantastic. Happy birthday. And I think that's all of the video comments that we had for today. We've already run over, so no time for for website comments, but thank you all very much for watching. If you're a gold tier member, then you can join me and Carl for the Zoom call in about 25 or so minutes. Thank you very much for watching, and to everybody else, enjoy your weekend.
Bye-bye.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.